Good morning. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. I'll return to Eager, The Surprising Secret Life of Beavers and Why They Matter by Ben Goldfarb one more time this week to read from Chapter 3, Deceive and Exclude, and some background. Beaver hats, which all trapped-out beavers were fashioned into, became less fashionable when Chinese silk became popular in the mid-1800s, just when beavers were all but gone from the country. Some states, among them Utah, California, Vermont, New York, reintroduced beavers in remote areas, and their numbers started coming back. More and more development into the countryside meant conflicts with people arose. Lethal trapping increased, and anti-trapping sentiment, too. In Massachusetts in 1996, a contentious ballot initiative was passed that banned conibear and leghold traps. This set the stage for beaver damage problem solvers. Here's a part of Chapter 3 of Eager. We'll meet Michael and Ruth Callahan and learn how Michael went from being a physician's assistant to having a successful business mitigating beaver problems. And we'll get an introduction to tricks of the trade called flow devices, pipe and fence systems that partially drain ponds by creating a leak not even a beaver can plug. Now the beginning of Chapter 3, Deceive and Exclude. If you were to charter a Cessna in Boston and buzz 30 miles northwest over Medford, Woburn, and Chelmsford, you'd find yourself flying through the airspace of Westford, Massachusetts, although gazing down from your cockpit, you probably wouldn't know it. 20,000 people live in Westford, but good luck spotting them from the air. The town, like many New England burgs, more resembles a forest than a metropolis. Its scatter of homes stand like islands in a sea of ponds and woodlands. There are roads, of course, and hospitals and libraries and community centers, but the bird's-eye view presents mostly as green and blue, a playground for turkeys and deer. Westford is also home to the Fletcher Granite Company, a quarry founded in 1881, whose stone built Boston's Quincy Market. Today, most of Fletcher's granite is sliced with diamond-edged carbide wire and embedded in street curbs. The largest hunks weigh 20 tons. Transporting them by truck is impractical. Instead, Fletcher ships its granite along railroad tracks that run through the company's yard and connect it to the wider world. Or at least Fletcher did use its railroad until the spring of 2017 when beavers dammed an adjacent pond and submerged the tracks. When that happened, Fletcher's people did what you do when you encounter beaver trouble in Massachusetts. They called Mike Callahan. One damp April afternoon, Callahan pulled his dinged-up Toyota Tundra into Fletcher Granite's yard to survey the damage. David, the company's goateed owner, climbed in to show him around. I wedged myself in back. We drove through a maze of sparkling granite blocks to a small wetland nearby. A cold drizzle dimpled the pond. Phragmites reeds, brown and crackling, towered in clumps 10 feet tall. A distant industrial roar rose from the quarry. Beaver sign lay everywhere. Planted saplings had been whittled to toothpicks. A fresh dam blocked the outflow, raising the pond and turning the ground spongy. You can see the top of the nest, or whatever you want to call it, David said, gesturing to a lodge mounded on the bank. I said to myself, who cut down all the saplings? It wasn't until I saw the chips at the bottom that I realized what had happened. The railroad tracks now sat below a foot of water, disappearing into the expanded pond like the wreckage of a city consumed by rising seas. A year ago, we spent $1 million bringing those tracks up to speed, David sighed. He sounded more rueful than angry. I kind of like the wildlife, he acknowledged, but this was too much. Callahan, Fletcher's knight in shining waders, slogged along the tracks, steadying himself in the water with the handle of a rake. He is tall and wide-shouldered, with heavy features, a mop of steel-colored hair, and an easy laugh. He's the kind of avuncular personage whom younger people call out of the blue when they need advice. He wore a crossing guard orange sweatshirt emblazed with the logo of his one-man company, Beaver Solutions LLC. Occasionally he stooped to cut a stick or bent reed, like Sherlock Holmes casing a crime scene. "It's the art of war. Know your enemy," he said. "I just don't like to refer to beavers as the enemy." "You have no fear of beavers coming up on you or anything?" David asked uneasily. "All the worst they'll do is slap their tail on the water," Callahan chuckled. "They're primarily nocturnal," Callahan said. "I almost never see them. They go to work when I'm sleeping, and I go to work when they're sleeping. We're on off shifts." Callahan, finally satisfied, straightened to offer his assessment. "One option is to trap 'em," he said, "but nature abhors a vacuum. Beavers will come back within a year or two, and they will come back, because the habitat's good. Better than to coexist with the current tenants, to leave the beavers in place while somehow preventing their ponds from engulfing Fletcher's railroad tracks. We need to drop this water level far enough so that your property is protected," Callahan said. The trick was to drain the pond without inciting the wrath of its occupants. "Usually I can drop the water up to a foot without the beavers being too concerned. The more I drop it, the more likely they are to try to raise the water back up." "How long does it take them to build a new dam?" David asked. "We could tear that out, and in a day or two they'd have it rebuilt," Callahan said. David's eyes popped. "But the thing is, you never really know what a beaver's going to do. All you can do is make guesses." Few people are as good at guessing what beavers are going to do as Callahan, one of a handful of beaver believers around the country who make their living by encouraging coexistence. Although Callahan is no anti-trapping hardliner, he's convinced that letting beavers live in most cases is not only ecologically sound policy, it's also cheaper and more effective than plodding along on the trapping treadmill. Rather than eliminating delinquent beavers, he prefers to control their impacts. He waxes poetic about wrapping trees in wire, setting fences around spillways, and most of all, regulating the dimensions of beaver ponds with pipes and fences. How can we enjoy all the good the beavers do while thwarting all the bad? It's a job that requires creativity, familiarity with wood and metalworking, a solid grounding in ecological history, a great deal of manual labor, and of course, intimate knowledge of his fur-clad combatants. It's like playing chess, except the opponent is a rodent and the goal is stalemate. A unique skill set is required, or maybe a mindset more than a skill set, Callahan said, as we drove through the rain to his next job. He thought for a moment. It also helps to be tall. At the time the fracas erupted, Mike Callahan's life couldn't have been less entangled with beavers. Callahan worked as a physician's assistant at a methadone clinic in western Massachusetts, trying to help opiate addicts stay clean. His wife, Ruth, was a nurse. Together, they ran a bed and breakfast. Theirs was a peaceful life, unmarred by beavers or controversy. When they encountered the rodents on camping trips, Callahan thought they were kind of cool and nothing more. Gradually, however, beavers dragged the Callahans into their orbit. The couple kept a close eye on the news and supported the 1996 ballot initiative, growing ever more dumbfounded by the vitriol that swirled around the retiring rodents. They learned about beavers' role as a keystone species, attended workshops sponsored by animal protection groups, and traveled to upstate New York for a beaver conference. Non-lethal beaver management became an interest, then an obsession. "We thought there had to be a middle ground," Callahan recalled to me. He and Ruth were most intrigued by the potential of flow devices, pipe and fence systems that partially drain ponds by creating a leak not even a beaver can plug. Although the term serves as an umbrella for any manner of contraptions, all flow devices function through a combination, as one reviewer put it, of deception and exclusion. Picture, for example, a python-length plastic pipe, its mouth submerged in a beaver pond, its body passing through the woody bulwark of a new dam, and its tail end gushing water into the creek downstream. That's the deception. The perplexed beavers, conditioned by evolution to fortify their dams against leaking, fail to grasp that water is actually departing the pond through the pipe. Both ends, meanwhile, are surrounded by metal cages that prevent beavers from detecting and plugging the leak. That's the exclusion. The frustrated rodents may go mad reinforcing their dams, but they're powerless to prevent the water's escape. When all goes well, beavers eventually give up, accepting their diminished pond as the new status quo. Maybe that all makes a straightforward technology sound more complicated than it is, but here's the gist. If you enjoy having beavers in your backyard but are not particularly keen on having to snorkel through your basement, you can install a flow device, or better yet, have a professional install one to prevent the wetland from inundating your home. Entranced by the dual power of deception and exclusion, Mike and Ruth convened a volunteer group of flow device installers to tackle conflicts themselves. Callahan traveled to Canada to meet Michelle LeClaire, a former trapper, installing flow devices in Ottawa, and organized a workshop starring the Vermont-based Skip Lyle, the world's foremost castorid conflict mediator. Early in their training, the Callahans caught wind of a meeting in nearby Amherst where the town leaders would decide how to manage beavers near a popular bike path. The couple, worried they weren't ready to tackle such a high-profile trail, agreed to sit in back, take notes, and inconspicuously get a feel for local politics. So we go to the meeting, walk in, and there's no one in the room except for the town board, Callahan recounted. They turn to us and say, "You must be the beaver people." We spent the next hour trying to convince them we didn't know anything, and they spent the hour trying to convince us to do it. The council proved persuasive. The Callahans protected the bike path with a flow device, and Massachusetts beaver crazy media duly covered the story. Requests for new devices began trickling in. The volunteer group scaled up. Callahan found he enjoyed beaver work more than his day job as a physician's assistant. "It was immediate gratification," he told me. "Working with beavers, it's like boom, in one day you can see the difference." In 2000, he converted the volunteer group into a for-profit business, Beaver Solutions. By the time I visited him in May of 2017, he'd installed more than 1,300 flow devices. Most of them variations on design originated by LeClaire and Lyle, the giants upon whose shoulders he stood. "Right now I've got 61 jobs at different stages," he told me one day we spent driving around Westford, "not to mention 450 sites that I have to do spring maintenance checks on, and the new requests just keep coming in." I'll stop there, reading eager. If you have questions, concerns, problems with beavers, there are many resources online that you can find. The Department of Natural Resources has a management plan for beavers under Wisconsin DNR management plans. The University of Wisconsin Extension has information about beavers, and many good links will have links to other resources within them. So you can spend hours learning and pursuing whatever avenue you want to pursue. There's also the Wisconsin Wetlands Association and their Wetland Coffee Breaks, which are video presentations. One of the most recent videos is called "The Influence of Beaver Dams on Wisconsin Trout Streams." This is a long-term study. The presentation is well worth looking for. Look for that on the Wisconsin Wetlands Association website under their Wetlands Coffee Break. Wisconsin Wetlands Association is just a terrific organization, and I'm so happy that it's here in Wisconsin. Their website is wisconsinwetlands.org. Their mission statement reads, "We are dedicated to the protection, restoration, and enjoyment of wetlands and associated ecosystems through science-based programs, education, and advocacy. We are a statewide nonprofit 501c3 based in Madison, Wisconsin. We envision a state where wetlands are healthy and plentiful and support ecological and societal needs, and where citizens care for, appreciate, and interact with these natural resources. We are a nonpartisan, science-based, professional organization advocating for wetlands." I want to read, finally, some words of Ben Goldfarb on page 113 of his book in a chapter called Realm of the Damned. Quote, "I'll cop to oversimplifying a complex issue here, but at an intuitive level, it's ludicrous to me that the harmony of beavers and fish remains up for debate. Before fur traders and colonists trashed the place, North American streams were stacked with hundreds of millions more beaver dams than they are today. And yet our rivers so churned with fish that European colonists claimed they ran silver. Castorids and salmonids, that's beavers and salmon, along with other fish families, of course, possess millions of years of entwined evolutionary history. Just as butterflies evolved to exploit beaver meadows, so must fish have adapted to the dams, ponds, and wetlands that shaped their habitat. The evolutionary connection is so common sense that I've seen it boiled down to a bumper sticker. Beavers taught salmon to jump." I hope you will get wet and enjoy the sights and sounds and smells of a wetland soon. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Thank you for listening.